Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The impact of U.S. aid freeze on African medical scientists and pharmaceutical companies.
In other countries like Brazil, the government supports vaccine manufacturers and have big shares in them to enable them to build up their volumes. The AU and the member states need to come together to support the quest to make vaccines on our continent.
South Sudan women make gains in the field of information technology. Malawi lions are given birth control to prevent a population boom. South African President Ramaphosa wants to continue trading with the U.S. through AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act. Ukraine agrees to U.S. ceasefire proposal.
We made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable and accounts for their interests, their security.
And Europe hosts talks on nuts and bolts of rearming. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Some medical scientists and pharmaceutical companies say the United States' decision to halt most aid to Africa means the continent will not be able to make its own vaccines for quite some time. Darren Taylor reports.
The COVID-19 pandemic threw a spotlight on Africa's inability to make its own vaccines. When developed nations bought out vaccines made in the United States and Europe, Africa was left in short supply. Its pharmaceutical manufacturers lacked the technology and the capacity to supplement supplies. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden said it would help Africa establish vaccine production facilities on the continent. But sharp cuts to foreign aid programs this year under President Donald Trump may mean that won't happen. Stavros Nikolaou, head of Africa's biggest pharmaceuticals manufacturer, Aspen Pharmacare in South Africa, is pessimistic about the possibility of the continent being able to make its own vaccines anytime soon.
Disappointingly, and again in the context of new outbreaks of regional pandemics, mpox in this instance, very little progress has been made. We've been speaking about a lot of things and good plans. Those plans are yet to materialize. Mpox vaccines do exist, but they've been stockpiled and procured some time ago by wealthier nations, and now you have Africa relying on either scrambling to try and source its own vaccines or relying on donations. Neither of those are sustainable options, and neither are they the options.
Mpox is an infectious disease that the World Health Organization says can cause a painful rash, enlarged lymph nodes, and fever. Most people recover, it says, but some get very sick and some die. This year, says the WHO, Mpox remains a public health concern in Africa, with outbreaks in multiple countries, particularly in Central and Eastern Africa. South African medical scientist Professor Glenda Gray at the University of Cape Town says the absence of U.S. support for African efforts to make vaccines means the continent must help itself to achieve this goal.
We do need government support to help manufacturers make vaccines or to do that shift to do the tech transfer. Pharmaceutical companies can't do it all by themselves, and manufacturers can't do it by themselves, particularly if they're African. So we have a funding deficit. In other countries like Brazil, the government supports vaccine manufacturers and have big shares in them to enable them to build up their volumes. The AU and the member states need to come together to support the quest to make vaccines on our continent.
In particular, says Nikolaou, Africans must work together to set up facilities to make the antiretroviral or ARV medicines domestically to treat HIV patients.
We import more than 80% of our antiretrovirals into Africa, yet we are saddled with 70% of the infection rate. For any manufacturing to survive on the continent, we need to have sustainable demand, sustainable offtakes, and we need to support the local capacities. It's no use saying, look, Africa, put up these capacities, and then the international procurement agencies continue buying these products outside of the continent.
After the COVID-19 pandemic, the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention set a goal for the continent to manufacture its own vaccines by 2040, an aim that Nicolau and Gray say remains very distant at this stage. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A car bomb exploded Tuesday at a hotel in the central Somali city of Beledweyne, kicking off an hour-long militant attack that killed an unknown number of people. The Associated Press reports that Somali security forces' continued efforts to flush out the attackers late Tuesday after heavy gunfire. The Cairo Hotel houses traditional elders and military officers involved in coordinating the government's offensive against the militant group Al-Shabaab. The Al-Qaeda-affiliated Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attack. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says his country wants to continue trading with the United States under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. The South African Mail and Guardian Online says the president made the comment during a question and answer session in the National Assembly on Tuesday. AGOA, which grants duty-free access to the U.S. market, is set to expire in September this year. President Donald Trump has recently criticized South Africa after it passed the Expropriation Act in January. Trump has said the law was an attempt to confiscate land from white farmers. Ramaphosa says this was a mischaracterization. Professor Sipho Tipe is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He tells me that President Ramaphosa's desire to engage the U.S. is a big climb down after once saying that South Africa will not be bullied.
This is a climb down by President Ramaphosa, who earlier had been so bold as to say South Africa would not be bullied. But what he is actually coming to terms with is that the Trump administration is very serious. When it takes a position, it takes a position. And also, I think some people have told him that South Africa cannot pretend to be a country that is very powerful. It needs the United States in as much as it needs other countries. But most importantly, it is also because people here are concerned that the African growth and opportunity dispensation might come to an end and might be threatened with non-renewal. And so the South African economy that depends on the exports that are duty-free in the U.S. might be affected adversely.
Do you think President Ramaphosa is considering or looking forward to a visit to Washington? Because he says that we will continue to engage the U.S. and other stakeholders.
Yeah, after what happened to Zelensky, I don't think President Ramaphosa would want to visit the United States. And I don't think he'd be very comfortable with the type of publicity or engagement that may involve a lot of journalists. President Ramaphosa is a person who reads the script. He is unable to speak off the cuff. He has something written. So I don't think that is the type of engagement that he would like to have. He would rather leave that to the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation or the embassies to deal with some of these issues.
In the meantime, AGOA is supposed to expire September this year. How important is this program for South Africa?
It's a very important program. Let me put it this way. Any program that makes a trade between South Africa and the United States possible, it's very important for South Africa as an exporting nation, but also to deal with issues of trade deficit. And what AGOA does is to make it possible for some of our products not to be exposed to the tariffs that will make the whole product or the manufacturing of the products almost financially unsustainable or not profitable. So AGOA plays that particular role. But I think most importantly, it is really about ensuring that there are bilateral trade relations between the two countries.
Professor Sipho Tipe is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 12. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. Women in South Sudan are making strides in the information technology field, breaking barriers in a male-dominated sector. Some, however, say the government and communities need to do more to help women enter the field. Dennis Longoye reports from Juba.
South Sudanese women are increasingly turning to technology careers. Dawa Florence is an information technology professional working for a United Nations organization in South Sudan.
I have always been passionate about technology and problem solving, which drew me into the IT field. Growing up, I was fascinated by computers and how things work behind the scene. While I was aware that IT is traditionally male-dominated, I saw it as an opportunity to challenge myself and to break barriers. There were times when I had to work harder to prove myself, often having my ideas or contributions overlooked initially, but I learned to speak up more confidently, document my work thoroughly, and build a reputation based on results.
Lydia Taban, who studied computer science and works on projects for the United Nations Children's Fund, says the number of women in computer technology is growing. She says, however, there is a need for mentorship programs for young women.
I always stay committed to putting my best foot forward, to putting in a lot of effort, time, energy, and professionalism into doing the best job I can. I have started meetups, groups that basically revolve around technology that enable women to get into fields like machine learning and data science, making those concepts easier for them to understand.
Pony Henry is a computer engineer and project coordinator at the Barnard Initiative for Leadership and Development and runs the tech community at Seniors Hub, a youth meeting venue. She says there is a need for the government to invest in technology.
We need technological advancement in general in South Sudan. So if you can have more people being literate enough to know about the importance of technology, it would make sense for us to have a very booming sector. One of the things that I think I really, really want to push forward in doing is to find more technical roles for myself, as well as to create technical roles for people who are coming after me.
Yine Yenkenyika is with the National Communications Authority and is also co-founder and mentorship director at Go Girls ICT Initiative. She says the initiative has been providing mentorship programs to girls in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics to steer young women toward technology.
We've seen very steady strides because when we began, our focus was university students, but quickly we realized it was important to think of programs for primary school and secondary schools. And during our engagement, we realized the importance of bringing teachers in. And as I speak right now, we have a demonstration lab for science teachers to experiment different science experiments before they go into classrooms. Our bigger picture is we want to see so many startups created by young people in the sector thriving in the economy.
Data reveal a significant gap in female representation within the computer tech sector. African women in technology face many challenges, including limited access to education and resources, gender discrimination, and the lack of role models. According to a report by the International Telecommunications Union, women make up only 20-30% of the information and communications technology workforce in Africa, and their presence in leadership roles is even lower. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonye reporting from Juba.
In Malawi, a unique wildlife management effort is underway at the Menjeti Wildlife Reserve. Conservation experts are performing birth control methods on lions to control the lion population and ensure antelopes and other prey continue to thrive. Lamek Masina reports from the Wildlife Reserve in the Chigwawa district.
The lions scramble for food, but evidently they are getting enough, as wildlife experts say the lion population here has grown to over 100. The experts say the population boom will likely lead to a decline in smaller species the lions prey on. Craig Thomas is the conservation manager at Majete Wildlife Reserve.
We haven't seen any significant impacts on prey populations yet. However, based on learnings in other reserves all across the continent, we know that those impacts will come. So in order to avoid those impacts from happening, we want to make sure that we reduce our lion population to a reasonable size.
The target is to reduce the lion population at least by half. The Majete Wildlife Reserve is home to various animal species. Authorities say animals at risk of depletion include rare species of antelopes, elands, and heartbeats.
Every now and then we see something, you know, out of the ordinary, such as a sable. But in general, it definitely seems to be waterbuck, buffalo, and warthog being taken the most.
Craig says so far, 13 adult males and 15 adult female lions have received contraception.
We first requested in 2022 to have contraception of females. It was a desloralin implant that went in between the shoulder blades. Then vasectomizing the male lions started in about May last year.
Some animal welfare campaigners fear the contraception methods may harm the animal's health. They say moving the lions would be a better option. Conservation experts say they haven't seen any side effects from the contraception and say that in Malawi, there aren't enough fenced-in reserves to safely put the lions. John Adendoof is park manager at Majete Wildlife Reserve.
So it would be irresponsible to move lions to reserves that don't have fences. Now, the only reserves in Malawi that have actually got fences right around the reserve are the AP Parks run reserves. And the other one that we've got in Malawi is Lwande National Park. But Lwande's got its own number of lions, and their numbers have also increased.
In the meantime, authorities say with such safety concerns, contraception remains a better option to manage the booming lion population in Malawi. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Chikwawa District, Malawi.
Nigerian authorities confirmed that a meningitis outbreak in the northwest was behind the death of at least 26 people over several weeks. The spread of the disease in the state of Kebbi began late January with over 200 suspected cases recorded, the State Commissioner for Health, Musa Ismail, told reporters on Tuesday. Ismail also said medical supplies have already been dispatched to the affected areas and isolation centers set up to prevent the further spread of the disease, according to the Associated Press. Mozambique's main opposition leader, Venancio Mondlane, said on Tuesday that he was questioned for 10 hours by prosecutors without being informed of what accusation laid behind the interrogation. According to the French news agency, the AFP, Mondlane, who claimed victory in October's contested election, added that he had been placed under judicial supervision. Angola's presidency says that talks will take place in Luanda soon between Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, and M23 armed group that has captured swaths of the Central African country's Volta East. The French news agency reports that Angola, as mediator in the conflict, will contact M23 so that the delegations of DRC and M23 can hold direct negotiations in Luanda in the coming days for a definitive peace. The United States praised Ukraine on Tuesday for accepting a ceasefire offer and taking a step forward on the path to ending the war with Russia. Moscow is expected to weigh in next on the American proposal. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
In Saudi Arabia Tuesday, Ukrainian negotiators accepted a proposal by a U.S. delegation to pause the Russia-Ukraine war for 30 days. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
We made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable and accounts for their interests, their security, their ability to prosper as a nation.
U.S. President Donald Trump rewarded Ukraine's positive first step toward peace, said U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz.
The president has decided to lift the pause on aid and on our security assistance to Ukraine going forward, and that's effective immediately.
After embracing the truce proposal, the Ukrainian delegation reiterated its commitment to peace. Head of the Ukrainian presidential office, Andriy Yermak.
For the people in the world, it's necessary once again to understand, not Ukraine started this war, but Ukraine ready for just and lasting peace.
Earlier Tuesday, Ukraine launched a massive drone attack against several Russian regions. Moscow said the attack could hinder future peace negotiations. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov.
There are no negotiations yet, so there is nothing to disrupt yet, although the emerging trend can indeed be significantly damaged.
Despite the tensions on the ground, it is expected the United States will move forward with its plans to present the ceasefire proposal to Russia next, in the hope that it will kickstart the process to achieving a lasting peace agreement. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
European military and political heads are holding high-level talks this week after calls for massively rearming Europe and boosting aid for Kyiv amid fears of a less engaged United States. Lisa Bryan has more from Paris.
Speaking to top NATO and European Union military brass gathered in Paris Tuesday, Dutch Defense Minister Ruben Brekelmans stressed the urgency of boosting Europe's defense. While the transatlantic alliance is important, he said, Europeans can no longer take U.S. protection for granted.
Europe, therefore, needs to fortify its security architecture. And we don't have much time to get this right. We only have one shot.
The same message came from European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen at the European Parliament.
We need a surge in European defence, and we need it now.
The European Union's executive arm has proposed an $873 billion plan for rearming Europe and supporting Ukraine. It includes relaxing fiscal rules and some $164 billion in loans for defense investments. It has proposed increasing defense spending by an additional 1.5% of member states' GDP over 4 years. The proposed surge comes as Washington's priorities appear to be shifting, and European leaders are worried Russia may not stop at Ukraine, fears their populations appear to share. One Ipsos survey found three-quarters of French and half of Germans are concerned the Ukraine conflict will spread elsewhere in Europe. Another poll, however, found few Europeans want to pay more for defense. Critics, including Hungary's Viktor Orban, suggest Europe can't afford to defend Ukraine. Others argue Brussels is assuming too much power. Europeans are also divided over whether to invest in their own defense industry or buy externally. The U.S. has been a top supplier.
They will want to continue to sell weapons to European countries.
Former French ambassador Michel Duclos is now an analyst at the Montaigne Institute Research Group in Paris. That's one argument, he believes, for Washington's short-term commitment to Europe's security.
What I fear more is not exactly that they disengage. It's more than they will want to have Europeans pay more and more for the U.S. protection.
This week sees more high-level meetings on Ukraine and European security. There's another in Paris Wednesday, gathering Europe's five top military powers, along with NATO and Ukrainian defense chiefs. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
And that's it for this Wednesday, March 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. VOA Africa is now available on WhatsApp. To share your input on our broadcast or receive our daily news updates, text us on +1 202 322 7501. That's +1 202 322 7501. You can also follow our WhatsApp channel by searching for our username, VOA Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.